Hey gang, we would like to wish our sponsor, Space Rehearsal and Recording, a very happy, happy second anniversary. They are celebrating tomorrow, Saturday, September 20th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Space Rehearsal and Recording. They're having their second anniversary party, a customer appreciation event in partnership with HAM, the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians, and Stubbs Barbecue. There will be complimentary food and drinks at 7915 Manchaca Road, Austin, Texas. That's right, Space Rehearsal and Recording. I'd like to thank Will and Sonny for being great sponsors. Skyrocket's had a room there since they opened, so for 2 years we've been there. Get on down there and find out, and you know that you can always call there and let them know that you heard about them on How Did I Get Here, and you will get 1 free hour of rehearsal time. So get your act together. Go down and celebrate with Space tomorrow, Saturday, September 20th from 3 to 6 p.m. Complimentary food and drink, Space Rehearsal Recording. We love you from How Did I Get Here. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. Will Knack, guitarist, makes his second appearance on the show, and he has put out a new solo album. It's just come out over the last couple of weeks. It's called The Only Open Road. It is available on the iTunes. It's available on the Spotify. It's available at CD Baby, and it's available at his website, willknaack.com, KNAAK.com. He has a CD release party for his album, The Only Open Road, next Tuesday, September 23rd at 8 p.m., at Strange Brew Lounge Side, which is a sponsor of the show. Now listen, that is also Ham Benefit Day. So a portion of the proceeds from this album sales and ticket sales will go to benefit Ham. That is the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians. And if you don't know about it and you live in Austin, Tuesday, September 23rd from like 6 in the morning until 2 in the morning, there is music in Austin, and proceeds are going to have the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians. You can go to myham, that's myhaam.org, and find out where everybody's playing. Now, it's crazy, man. There's restaurants are giving a proceeds of their sales that day to Ham. Probably Whole Foods is doing something as well as having bands there from 6 in the morning on. Anyway, everybody's playing around town, and you can go and be a part of it. You know, you might be able to check out a band on your way to work that morning. Before you even go to work, there's going to be bands playing. So you might want to wake up, go have a little breakfast at Whole Foods, watch some bands, go to work, get off work, go have a happy hour somewhere, watch some bands, then head on down to Strange Brew on September 23rd at 8 p.m. and watch Will Knack for his CD release party. Okay? Will Knack is a great guy. He's been on the show before. I love him. I love talking to him. And he is an over-the-top amazing musician that's been playing in bands since he was a kid. And we talk about that phenomenon here in Austin. I've talked about it with Tommy Taylor. I've talked about it with Will Sexton. When you get to be a certain level of good here, they throw you into the pro ring. And they go, hey, kid, make it happen. So Will and I have a great conversation about that, about his record, about everything, okay? So don't forget Ham Day, September 23rd. Go to myham.org and find out where bands are playing. If you live in Austin, this is one of the things that makes Austin's music community so unique. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go see bands. I was talking to Todd Wolfson this morning. We're talking about going to the Whole Foods thing in the morning, seeing bands there, and what can happen. Anyway, I'll be seeing bands all day. I'm going to bring my recorder. Maybe I'll do some interviews. I did it a couple years ago, like at 7 in the morning. I was interviewing Omar Vallejo outside of Whole Foods one day. It was great. All right. So, yeah, Will Knack, this is going to be a great show. We always have a great conversation. He's a really entertaining guy, really insightful, very sensitive, very smart, and fucking so talented. It's unbelievable. And I'm very proud of him for putting out a solo album, because it's hard when you're a side guy to kind of get it together, to put it out there, and then, you know, you got to balance work with this, you know, with this solo thing now, and now you got to kind of be a different guy. But I applaud him. He's a great guy. He's got a great band. The record sounds great. It was done by Jeff Plankenhorn, and it features Jeff Plankenhorn, features Brandon Temple, who's amazing, and Yogi, just amazing musicians on there. He's amazing. Casey Crowley sings on it. Great stuff. I love this dude, Will Knack, all right? So before we get to Will, what's going on with me? Today is a busy day for me. Today, actually, in Austin, Texas, is Danny Crooks Day. If you don't know who Danny Crooks is, he's a guy that owned Steamboat, which is a club that was around I guess it was around the 80s and 90s, but he basically ran it in the 90s. And he was fantastic. And it closed down, 14 years ago or something. He reopened it in a different place. But he's a character, very popular guy. He wrote a book about being a club owner. And they're giving him a day. So today is Danny Crooks Day in Austin, Texas. And they're having a celebration of that tonight at the Roost from like 7 until 2 in the morning. All kinds of bands, Vallejo, Del Castillo, and I'm sorry I'm drawing a blank on it. I don't have anything in front of me for it, but I am playing there. I'm going there, and I'm going to play a few songs at around 8 o'clock because I have to run back into town and play at the 1-to-1 bar with Skyrocket. But I am going to celebrate Danny, and they're going to show a Steamboat movie at 7, I think, before the music starts. And doors are at 6 at the Roost. Great place if you live up north or you're a big fan of Steamboat. You know, you should go up there and celebrate it. They get together and they sort of celebrate what happened at this club. And I think that's really sweet. The fans that used to come to the club come out. The musicians that played the club come out, and also some of them play. And it's sort of a reunion of sorts. And get together and you say hi to Danny. Hey, man, how you doing? You miss him standing outside there at 6th Street or walking around his club or running lights or running the scene downstairs in the office. Guys like Danny don't come around a lot. There's not a lot of those guys around. They leave. Talked to Paulo Vasey a couple weeks ago. He was actually partnering with Danny and Steamboat at the end of it there. He ran Momo's. Guys like that, they're just not around. Guys that support music, help you put bands together. Oh, I know this guy's looking for a drummer. I think Danny helped me resurrect bands a couple times. Always gave me a place to play and was a really great guy. We did have a little bit of a tumultuous relationship there. You know, we went through times where we stopped talking to each other and it was weird. And it sort of has left this weird thing. When he called me and asked me to come and play, he actually acknowledged that. And he was like, hey, you know, I know that we've had our differences in relating. And I'd like to put that past us. Come out and celebrate Steamboat with me. And I said, fuck yeah, buddy. I'll come out there and do that. Then, as I said, I'm going to be playing with Skyrocket. We don't normally play shows inside Austin. I mean, that's really changed. We don't do Cedar Street anymore. We're only out there at Steiner Ranch or in Pflugerville at the Roost or at Hanover's, at all the different places. But now we are playing a show in town at the 1-to-1 bar, which is on South Lamar. You can come on down. I think the doors are at 9:30 and the show is at 10:30. So I will be at the Roost for a little while playing solo. And then tonight I will head on down to the 1-to-1 bar and jam with Skyrocket. Then tomorrow we're going to Houston and we're playing a benefit for something that we've played before. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I want to. Hey, before we get to this Will Knack conversation, I want to thank a guy named Josh who goes under the name Coffee Shop Criminals. I know I've met him over the years. I want to say I've known him for like a decade. But I noticed that he comments on stuff sometimes, and then I noticed that I got a bunch of likes on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page, which, by the way, if you don't like it, go to our Facebook page yet. Not if you don't like it. But come on down and like this page. I post pictures of people I'm going to be interviewing with. You'll know who I'm talking to. I, you know, post stuff about bands that have been on the show. Whatever. Anyway, I noticed a spike in the likes. And I was like, wow, that's weird. Bunch of people, new people just liked it out of the blue one day. And then I was talking to my cousin yesterday, and she told me that he was a fan of the show. And I said, I wonder if he would do, you know, like maybe spread the word about this. And she said, yeah, for sure he did. So I have to thank you, Josh, Coffee Shop Criminals. You're a nice guy. Thank you so much for doing that. That means a lot to me. And I want to tell you guys, you know, we don't have advertising. And this isn't a show that you just happen upon tuning, you know, through the radio. This show is just kind of out there, and it gets spread by word of mouth. And social media is a great place. If you hear a show that you like, or if you hear the show for the first time and you go like, shit, this is really good. I know some people that would like it. Turn them on to it. Post about it. I love that. Tag us in it. It makes me very happy, and it helps us out. We're trying to get as many people as we can listening to this show, as many like-minded people, you know? I think that the listenership is a very specific listenership, but I think that all of us listening and all of us on the show are people that would be like-minded people that would talk probably on a plane, meet, Stay in touch. Hey, I'll look you up on Facebook. Anyway, so help spread the word if you can, okay? Like our Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. You can follow me on Instagram as well. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Or just like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Okay? And spread the word about it. If you like it, let people know, okay? Thank you, Josh, for being so cool. You know, I love doing this show, but I also want it to grow. And it is growing. It's always growing. We're up to a lot of people, man. Over 21,000 downloads per month, okay? And a bunch of just random listens. So I want to thank all of you for listening. Help us spread the word. And also spread the word about Will Knack and his new album, The Only Open Road, which you can find everywhere right now as we speak. And you can see him play live on Ham Benefit Day, September 23rd, 8 p.m. at the wonderful Strange Brew. All right, let's talk to Will Knack. He's an amazing guy, and I fucking love him. All right, let's get down.
Feel like a stranger moving on a fast train. Feel like a killer on the loose. Bloody chance gonna keep me rolling. Bloody chance keep me from that news. Hiding from the law and running with the devil. Got no friends to call my own. Lost my lover, left her behind me. Got nobody. Try to understand. Said all in all, I'm just a man. Life never goes the way we planned. Our time just footsteps in the sand.
The Only Open Road.
That's right.
That is right. Produced by the great Jeff Plankenhorn.
Yeah.
Who's coming back to take back his residency tomorrow or after tomorrow.
Oh, you're filling in, right?
Yeah, I've been filling in all summer.
Excellent.
So I've seen you every Tuesday almost.
Yeah.
Oh, but wait, you just went on tour with Wade Bowen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're gone for a couple weeks out west.
How was that?
Excellent, man. You know, you get back and it's super hot here, but it's beautiful. Great time. August, get out of Texas for
three weeks.
And yeah, all through Cali. We did Las Vegas, Phoenix on the way. Then we were up in Portland and some places, Oregon.
Where'd you guys play in Phoenix?
Seattle.
Was that the Hotel Continent?
No, it was like one
Club
of those
Congress?
Midnight rodeo places.
Oh, okay. Is there a lot of that with those tours?
Not in that particular tour, but on the way out, you know, in the Southwest region, like in California, it was all different club dates and different places there. And like Knitting Factory in Boise. What was that? Slow Brew.
Oh, yeah. But it's like the Knitting Factory in Boise?
Yeah.
Like New York and L.A. club?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, there was some surprising clubs.
That
was, actually a really nice one. I was like, what the hell's going to be in Boise?
Yeah.
Portland and Seattle were my favorite shows. I'm blanking on the venues right now.
But, yeah.
You know,
are you
get off the bus, it's all the same.
Were you an Ian Moore fan growing up?
Yeah.
Because you were born and raised here.
Absolutely.
That's just, to me, that's always like amazing. But you have that, we were talking about it just a minute ago, that when you're a kid here, even if you're a kid, if you get to a certain level, they throw you into the pros.
Yes, they do, man. Thank God.
You were what, 12?
12 when I started playing. Yeah, I played with Doug Somm. I didn't even know who he was because I was so ignorant, you know. My dad thought that was so cool. I learned later how cool it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a fan now? Like,
Oh, yeah. I've been a fan for a long time, you know, just like right at 12, my first time playing at the Hole in the Wall, and Johnny X was kind of taking me under his wing, and Doug Somm's up there, I don't know, on the other guitar, and I get handed this guitar to play a Chuck Berry tune. Yeah. And I get off stage, it's like my dad's like, hey, you just played with Doug Somm from the Sir Douglas Quintet.
Yeah.
Just over my head, you know, like I was just kind of scratching the surface. I was like getting out of playing grunge and stuff like that and had gotten into Hendrix a little bit, which got me into older school blues and Chuck Berry. I thought if I could play Johnny B. Goode, I would be the greatest guitar player in the world.
Yeah.
And then I learned to play that and opened up the whole rat's nest.
Do you like that song still?
Oh, I still do. You know, sometimes I feel a bit of a novelty playing it, but I don't play it that often, but yeah, I love it. Oh, Chuck Berry's the best, man.
The best. You know, you ever see that weird video of him? Peeing.
Well, I have a joke about that. Yeah, he got busted having cams installed under the toilet seat of the women's restroom. So I said his newest single is going to be Ginny P. Good.
I have a problem with that song having my name.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, there's always like some 50-year-old guy that goes like, all right, you want to be good, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Hey, okay, so you're making your first album after being a sideman.
Yeah.
Since you were 12. You're about to be 30.
Yeah.
It's 18 years in the business. At 30, you're like a seasoned professional.
That's crazy to think. Yeah, sometimes I feel older than I am, and then sometimes I still feel like a kid just starting out. You know, it's a very interesting dichotomy, I guess.
Why did you wait so long?
I think there was a lot of things holding me back. You know, one is finance, you know, with the whole Kickstarter revolution, that gave me a medium to kind of find that. Right. But I didn't really have the self-confidence, and I couldn't really get my momentum together. I was kind of I got a little erratic. I had some bad influences, to say the least, and while I kind of got caught up in some things I maybe shouldn't, I got out of that a while back, and it kind of all coalesced as I found myself, you know, more focused.
So you basically, like, there was, and also you were making a living as a side guy. It's hard to jump off a leave a job.
It is, definitely, and I'm not necessarily going to do that. I'm going to try and work them together, you know, but...
Well, now you can, you know, nowadays you can.
Right.
I mean, for some reason, there's like a weird... Does a business freak you out? I mean, you're making physical CDs of this. You're making physical copies of this, as well as, like, it's available digitally. Obviously, if it wasn't, that would be totally weird, but you're making physical CDs. Does that... I'm trying to find a way to. I mean, when you get a CD, what do you do with it? Do you have a CD player? You listen to CDs from?
Check it out in cars usually. Yeah, okay. Driving. You know.
All right.
You're like, hey, I'm gonna have to drive, so better put this in and check it out.
Right. And basically, what I'm saying is,
are CDs even relevant? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they?
To some people they are. I'm sure some people are going to get it and throw it away, but probably not the people that buy it. So don't give it to people. I don't know.
No, they want, and I'm not making this weird or anything. I'm basically saying is that you come from a world, like, you've been playing mostly with country people. Mm-hmm. That's still a place where CDs are sold. A style of music where the fans actually still buy CDs.
Yeah.
I think it's probably amazing. The highest one.
I believe it is. I think someone said that maybe, as far as physical units, it outsells on the top genres in the mainstream, hip hop and rock put together.
Yeah,
country outsells it.
Right,
which is crazy.
So, do you have plans on being able to open for any of the acts that, like, you play guitar with? I mean, is that something that you?
It may be a possibility. Yeah. I have not discussed it with anyone, but we'll see kind of what happens. I played with an artist that was very unsupportive of it. Like,
oh, really?
That it was, I don't now. The guy, he thinks is really cool and, you know, probably would allow me to do something like that. But I haven't crossed that bridge, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, figure out the couth. It is his show and his name, and I have a salary, and it's getting me by really nicely. So, you know, you don't want to step on toes.
Sure.
You know, but.
Hey, tell me about the Darawa gig. What is that, like a total freedom gig? Do you just show up and then there's a guy's like, hey, it's an A, and then you just jam? Because I've seen you do that a lot.
It can be like that. It really varies because the band is me, Ernie, and this guy, Chris Alcaraz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have a different guest each week because it's a weekly residency. It kind of keeps it interesting. But I can't even tell you what it's going to be like from week to week because the guests are so far. Like, I think we have like an R&B... a pop R&B singer this week. Last week we had a guy that was like a old school cosmic cowboy country guy. Mm-hmm. Ernie had like Floyd Domino. That was the hardest gig because they were like talking about, I had to get him to write me charts to some of the tunes because he's so affluent in jazz, and I can play some jazz, but it's not like I'm a studied guy, you know.
I saw in your EPK though, it's really good. Like, you make it, you're like, oh, it's like fake jazz or whatever you kind of refer, jazz flunky, is that what you said it was?
Yeah, you know.
It's not at all. It's fucking, you know, you're one of my favorite guitar players. And I was flying home yesterday with Kyle Crushem, and we were both talking about how amazing you are. Zach Loy was in here and on the podcast talked about how you were one of his favorite guitar players. You're an amazing guy. And like last year when we did those Liars and Saints shows and you played those whole shows with us, I definitely was like, every time we've talked about getting back together, I'm like, we got to do it, but Will's got to play too.
Well, I loved
Even when, and when you don't, you know, when you don't know the song or whatever, you play like with such respect for the song. You know, you don't get in the way. You don't, you know, you're fucking consummate professional.
Well, that's 18 years, man. You know, I hope I got something right. Half times I feel like I play half loss. You know, the more I do it, like, it's just interesting. But yeah, you know, you hear that all the time. It's about playing the song. You know, it only takes as much ability as it takes to play the song. And if the song only requires for you to play four notes in that entire verse, and that's all you needed to play, you know?
Yeah.
I think the one of the hardest things to get comfortable with is leaving space. Like, you're up there with an instrument in your hand in front of people. Okay, I'm just not going to play for three bars, because when I come in, it's heavy. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it adds something in a different.
So much more.
You know, as opposed to just playing all the time and filling up space. Because that makes you feel less nervous, or it's like a tick, man, nervous tick. And, you know, you do get nervous being up on stage. I don't get stage fright, but I get anticipation, and that's the thrill of it. I think that's why we do it, man. It's like you're addicted to this great feeling that you get. And when there's a great crowd that loves what you're doing and perceives it, and you go back and forth into something greater than you could ever do alone, like, those are moments. It's like being out of body. And that's exactly why I do it. It's not money or anything like that. It's that feeling, and that it's just, wow.
Do you think that's something that's instilled in those of us that kind of grew up in this scene? Because this is a different scene than had we grown up in LA or New York or Boise. You know what I mean? Like, the importance here is mostly placed on, can you play? Are you good? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's not, are you this polished product with a great business model or financial backing or connections or what? It's not social climbing.
Did you write that hit? Did you figure out the formula?
Right.
It's more like, are you good? And then like, being good is what I feel like a lot of us are more into than, I mean, or I wouldn't live in this opulent apartment. But you know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, from Casey to like Jeremy to you to like Zach to, you know, Casey McPherson to like all of us believe in being good. And that's what we get off on, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, more than success or anything like that. And I feel like that's indicative of this culture that's been created by this community and by the people that came before us, Eric Johnson, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, all those guys.
Doug Somm.
Yeah. A guy that I got to hang out with a lot. He was a good guy. I was in a band with Shandon, and he was so supportive of anything his kids did, you know. He was there at all the shows and hanging out backstage and telling everyone stories and being Doug Somm. Great guy.
Larger than life, man.
So The Only Open Road is your debut album. Let's get back to this. You did it with Jeff Plankenhorn at the helm. And you did it with Yogi
Brannon, and,
yeah, Brannon Temple,
that's killer,
amazing. Do you play with those guys? Are they going to be the band at the release?
Yes,
on the 23rd. Wow, who else is playing? Just the three of you guys, or Jeff?
Jeff will be up there too. Okay. I believe Casey's going to do some vocals.
Good,
because she did some on the record.
Oh, she did. Good. Good.
We had Stefano play like two or three songs on the record too.
He's amazing.
But I don't think he's going to be there.
Okay,
but he has a gig with the Grissom.
So. Oh yeah. Is Grissom a big guy for you?
Yeah, I was talking to him earlier today, and he said to say hi to you.
Oh, good. So, I love that guy David Grissom. So much. Yeah.
He's doing great.
Good.
Yeah, man. He's always been one of my favorites, you know.
Is it bad for me to say? I can kind of tell? But that's just someone that also, no. I've been watching David since I was like 15, you know?
No, I mean.
And how long have you been watching? I mean, how long were you?
Yeah, since I was a teenager too. You know, when Storyville, I think Storyville was out and at the height of their deal, right when I was starting to play.
Yeah,
like I was just learning a few chords and heard that stuff. You know, and yeah.
Are you friends with David?
Holt? Oh yeah. Oh yeah, Holty. Yeah, I've known Holty longer than I've known Grissom actually. But yeah, both those guys, man.
Those guys are just—they're amazingly supportive and just those. I'm sorry, I don't want to keep on going back to this, but I guess I just thinking about that Paul Ovese thing that I was working on earlier and talking to you and having to talk to Tommy the other day, I just all of a sudden I feel like I have this rekindled the love affair with the history of our scene, you know, and what it's made all of us.
That's pretty beautiful. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, guys like Ian Moore, everybody, you know, we all saw these guys. We all looked up to these guys and we've all ended up jamming with these guys and like hanging out with these guys. And those guys say hi to us. Fuck, David Grissom is the guy with the full page Paul Reed Smith ad in Guitar Player magazine. And he said to say hi. And you talked to him. And now you've got a Paul Reed Smith endorsement.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful world.
Really beautiful.
Did he help you out with that?
He did. Yeah.
What a great man. Oh, what a great man. Great man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you did this record. Who else? Did you have any other special guests on it?
No, that's it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Jeff, Brandon, Yogi, Casey did some vocals, Stefano on a few tracks. Other than that,
that was it. Where did you guys record it?
It's called Shine Studios, great studio on East 4th. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Justin Douglas, he's in a band, Royal Forest.
Uh-huh.
He did all the mixing and engineering. He has great old school gear, a lot of vintage stuff.
And you did it to tape.
Tape. Yeah. To tape. Yeah. I mean, we mixed on Pro Tools.
Okay.
As you know, but yeah, we cut everything to tape originally. Good. And so there's a lot of live performances from the rhythm section, the electric guitar, and vocals. And we would overdub acoustic, like I was saying, because I would start out singing on electric because there's no bleed.
Yeah.
And there's a song, Please Walk Slow, was acoustic. And we did that all live, too. It was at the end of the session. We were done. And we're like, man, let's just keep going. We got time. We're already here. So we tried one more, and just bam. You know, you start playing with guys like that, it raises your level, too, you know?
Shit,
like,
yeah, man.
They're not missing anything or missing much.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's human, but I can't believe that they're human.
Was there a lot of... I mean, did you get together and like to work out the parts for the record? I know you did pre-production. What was that like? Like, what did that look like? Was it you guys playing a song and then Jeff saying like, okay, well, Brandon, why don't you try this kind of thing? Or you guys kind of like work out Brandon? Did they have a big say in what they were doing? Like, was Brandon like, here, check this out, I got this idea for this song? Or did he just, I don't really see him saying that, but but I could, you know.
No, absolutely. I think it was... everybody kind of had a little bit to say and would stir the pot. It was pretty easy. I mean, music, you get these guys to play because they play a certain way. You know, you don't get in there and be like, hey, I got Brandon Temple. Can you play more like JJ?
Yeah.
Or do you think you could play more like Ernie Durawa on this? Sorry. You know what I'm saying? I think some people overproduce a musician. It's like, you should be more careful in picking. If you get David Grissom, you should let him, it's because you wanted him to play like he plays, you know? So that was kind of the deal between that. I knew that everyone was going to play the way I wanted them to play for the most part. We'd be like, hey, let's shorten this part. You know, let's cut this down to this, or let's add it here. Or maybe I'll play like this. There was a little bit of banter like that, but it was pretty natural. Cause I mean, here's a song, you play like you play, let's play the song like you would play it, and let's put it on tape and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
So we spent one day at Strange Brew for like 2-3 hours, just kind of playing through the tunes.
Oh, and that's good.
Jeff would kind of listen. He'd play, you know. Yeah, we figured out some stuff like that, but not a whole lot to worry about.
Something like there, because you got coffee right there.
Yeah,
like you just have to walk through the door and get more coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. I love Strange Brew.
Yeah, the place is great. Scott has created a nice environment for people and kind of helped put them together.
Yes,
talking to the to Kevin and Tony from Renfro, and they were you know. He basically put them together. He told Kevin, like, oh, hey, you should have this band with Tony, and they did it. Okay, so you guys were rehearsing there at Strange Brew, and just kind of like it was pretty easy. It was there. People knew what to play. And obviously you did get those guys to be themselves when they played on the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So were there... So you did a Kickstarter, and is there... There's a thing in there where you said it says you can still donate. Is that...
There's a link, I think, on my website. Yeah, okay. You can still, every now and then I'll see, like, someone's giving you $20 on PayPal, you know? So, yeah, it's still up there.
That's cool.
So, if you have a desire, of course, you can just buy the record. It'll be out. By the time you're hearing this podcast, it'll be on iTunes.
Yeah, it's on iTunes. And Will it be on Spotify or Pandora?
I need to look. I'm doing the TuneCore thing. You may be familiar. TuneCore is like a digital release thing. It's kind of a one-stop shop. So it'll be available on almost everywhere that you can imagine. Okay. But we'll just go with iTunes.
And people can keep up just real quick to willnack.com. K-N-A-A-K.
That's correct. Yeah.
Willnack.com. Okay. So you're doing the CD release party on September 23rd at 8 p.m. At Strange Brew. It's also your 30th birthday. It's also the ham benefit day.
Yep.
And so what is that? Have you benefited from ham?
I have, man. I have to say, I go to the clinic through there. They've been helpful.
Say the clinic, it always sounds like BD. Sorry.
Yeah, well, hey, there was this couple times. Right? just kidding. Maybe you take a guess. That and the dentist stuff, it's great. So. Yeah.
Okay. So so
authentic smiles.
Authentic smiles. Yeah. Yeah. The great Shane.
Yeah.
Shane Mott.
Yeah. Yeah. He really is very helpful.
Yeah, we're fans of him here at the show. All right. So let's talk about this. God damn it! I'm drawing a blank on what I was going to say. I had something before we did the Shane Mott thing, and then I forgot. I wanted to talk about your rig. I don't normally talk about gear a lot on here. But with somebody whose gear is, like, there's people that want to know. You have videos that are like, hey, here's my rig. This is what I run through. How much has your rig changed since that video that's on your website?
Well, quite a bit, in fact.
Because you're always you're always switching out the pedals.
Right.
Testing out the guitars.
Yeah.
And then different gigs require different things. I'll stop talking now and let you answer the question.
No, you're right. It's actually evolved into two separate rigs at this point. I have one that's a road rig and one that's an in-town rig.
Okay.
Part of it is lightweight. When I have tech setting up my stuff, I don't care how heavy it is.
Yeah.
when I'm loading into Strange Brew by myself, I like to make as few trips as possible.
Yeah.
And
so what's your in-home?
In-home, I have a Two Rock, which is a hand-wired 35-watt Studio Pro. It's kind of like a Blackface meets a Dumble clone, I guess. It's kind of its own thing, too. Check it out.
And Dumble is that amp that you were talking about that John Mayer bought. Bought them up.
Yes,
up the market
Stevie Ray played them. Larry Carlton. It goes, Sonny Landreth. There's a lot of pretty iconic guitar players that were known for playing Dumbles. And he would kind of like, I think, put his circuits in a wax seal so no one could totally see what he was doing. Like, if you were to take the wax off, you would damage the circuit, so you couldn't tell. And I think his son may still do something. I don't know. I need to research up on that. But yeah, they're like $70,000. Like,
Jesus.
A lot of rock stars buy them up and even just put them in the closet. It's interesting. But Seabree does have one at his studio, which is pretty cool.
That's great.
But yeah, so that, just a smaller pedal board, but it has basically every sound you could want. That M9 that Line 6 does, I know some guitar players are going to cringe it at the Line 6 mentioned, but it just allows you to have anything that you could possibly imagine. I don't use it for overdrives because I think that that's where it's lacking, but every delay, all time-based modulation effects, a lot of cool stuff.
And they're all modeled after great pedals, right?
They are. So, yeah. You could spend $10,000.
But the gain in distortions?
Lacking for me. Okay. There's one cat I know who plays with John Evans who uses that, and he gets some great sounds out of it. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but I just can't do it.
What's your favorite gain distortion?
I like the full tone stuff. That was like my first pedal was a full tone full drive, but
the light blue, right?
The light blue one. Yeah, yeah. I have a Blackstone. It's this handmade pedal from New York that's really good right now. A cheap Boost that's like, it's a model after the Klon pedal, which are now 900. You can get it for about $70. It's Electro Harmonix called Soul Food. I'm just aware of it, and it sounds better than some of my $200 Boosts. So that's something worth checking out. So, yeah, I got that. I play my Tele, a Gibson Les Paul Special here in town, the Two Rock, and then a pedal board. Strymon, I like their stuff. Great delays. I was saying the Blackstone Overdrive, check that out. With the road rig, I have this company, New Vintage, which they're really gracious. Hand-wired as well. They're based out of Minnesota. Some of the Foo Fighters are playing some of their stuff. One of the guys from Blink-182. So they're getting some upper echelon rock guys to start playing their stuff. But they make – this one's kind of like a Blackface, I guess. It sounds very Fender-like, but it has a little more tonal options.
Yeah, I'm noticing a lot that a lot of my friends and people that I kind of keep up with their rigs and stuff are there's not a lot of like dudes bringing Fenders and Marshalls to gigs anymore.
Yeah. I have a 60s basement I bought from Crushin' that I use quite a bit.
He used a basement. What was it, a Tweed?
No, it's one of the heads, black faces.
Yeah.
But he sold it to me. I bought it Austin Vintage, but it was him. We're going back and forth. And
right. Have you been to the new Austin Vintage?
I have. I think they're moving now again.
From the house place across from 24 Hour Fitness? They just opened like last week or something.
Okay, so that's the new one. No, I have not been to the new place. I've been to the one that was up on Burnett.
Okay. Let's go back to rig stuff, man, because that's interesting to me. You use the same distortion on tour? On the road?
No, I have some full tone stuff. I'm kind of thinking about switching it up, but we're using in-ears, and I don't know. It doesn't matter as much. I know that sounds crazy, but it's like you can't even. I don't really like the way guitars sound through in-ears, and you can buy the most expensive ones on the planet, and it still doesn't sound right. So I use really cheap in-ears, and it's not as effectual. You know, as long as the sound man's happy, I guess I'm happy. But yeah, I mean, I'm using full tone stuff out there. Strymon. I have that Soul Food. I have the Line 6 M9 on both boards because it's just so universal. Last time I went to Europe, I took that in an overdrive box because it has a built-in tuner. It has everything that you could imagine. So you can get great reverbs, delays, and modulation. That's how I use it for, like, tremolos, delays, reverbs.
Uh-huh. You know. Hey, you know, I guess I think the question I was getting to with the amp thing was, do you feel like the boutique amp companies that are coming out now are making higher quality stuff than what Fender and Marshall and guys that we know kind of grew up seeing their products? Do you feel like that's I think it's got to be, because everybody's playing different amps in those, to me,
right?
And I'm seeing that a lot more.
As far as what Fender and those mainstream companies are putting out today, absolutely, the quality of the boutique stuff's way better. The old school stuff still is timeless and hold its deal. I just got this new vintage amp and it's great, and I have a deal with them. I'm trying to rep them, but part of me is like, oh, just go back to the basement. Yeah. You know, I mean, those old school amps are never gonna not hold up the test of time. You know, just like old classic muscle cars or something. You know, it's just. It was great, you know, and it still is great. But yeah, as far as like Fender's reissues today of their amps, there's companies that are just, you know, putting them to shame.
Yeah,
at recreating their own stuff, and then, you know, they'll do some tonal tweaks, give you more options. But I'm kind of finding I like less options. You know, the most simple is better, and I'm also finding that I can get my tone happening on about anything. You know, I used to think it was real specific or try and figure that out, and It's more the player, you know. I kind of posted, dude, you know.
I have a Grissom story for you.
Yeah.
I used to live at the Congress House. Like, I was just kind of lived there. And so, like, on days when I wasn't doing stuff, I would help out with sessions and stuff, like set up mics and stuff. And one day Grissom came in for a session that he was doing there, and I set up the mic in there. And he was just kind of talking to everyone as he was, like, tuning his guitar. And then he just plugged the cable into his guitar from the amp that I had set up the mic in front of, and when he tested it, it was Grissom.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think anything he would play, if he came through and played through my pod on that weird Epiphone Les Paul Jr. copy, it would be David Grissom. You know what I mean? It's in the fingers. When you play, it would be that, too. Well, yeah. Mac, it's in the fingers.
And I don't know what technically that is. Is it, you know, it's pressure, bone density? Like, who even knows all the way, but...
what you've developed.
Yeah.
You know? Who, when you were starting out, like, who were your... You said you started out like with grunge and stuff. Were those your guys?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I loved Kurt Cobain when I was single digit, you know, and he was happening. He died, I guess, when I was 9. And I knew a few chords then, but I really didn't start playing till I was 11. But yeah, I liked all that stuff. I remember, it's kind of hilarious, that Back to the Future made me want to play guitar.
Oh, that was why the Johnny B. Goode thing was.
Yeah, so for boring. Sure. I think so. My uncle, actually, who just passed while I was on the road in California, he was pretty instrumental and showing me stuff. And he had a big love for classic country, rock and roll, and old blues. So he played a version of Johnny B. Goode. I think that stuck with me. And I remember watching that movie with him. And yeah, Uncle Sonny, we'll miss you, man.
Sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's life, though.
Your people dad's a jammer, too, right?
He plays piano.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays some pretty smoking stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And but it was Hendrix, really, that got you going back and finding the older guys because you knew what he was into?
Right. There was that Hendrix and Stevie, you know, because Stevie's so iconic here. And then, yeah, I was like, oh, wow, what's this? And I met Clifford when I was young. I was opening up for the Keller Brothers a lot when I was like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And he had just gotten out of
prison,
jail for a little bit. And he's like, hey, check this out. Check out this Alan Wolfe record, or this Magic Sam record. And
he did?
Yeah, yeah.
I love that guy, man.
He was very, very cool.
Very cool. That's another guy that's missed like crazy in this scene. He left a vacuum. He was very giving. He was very supportive of everyone. Paulo Vasey was even talking about how, like, when he opened Momo's, Cliff gave him a call and was like, hey, let's go to lunch. I like what you're doing, you know?
That's cool.
It's pretty cool. Okay, so were you ever into Eric Johnson?
I like EJ. Yeah.
EJ.
You know, he kind of gets an interesting rap from some people. Like, my dad doesn't like to listen to him. He feels like he's too robotic, which, whatever. I mean, maybe it's the production of when his hit records came out. And a lot of guitar players kind of will either really like him or not like him. But I think that when you're that good, obviously you develop as many haters as you do people that enjoy you. You know, it's like, I think some people are jealous of Eric Johnson because he might be the, you know, best electric. Technically, the stuff he's doing, good luck, everybody else. Good luck.
And he's kind of like on a Jeff Beck level where there's no denying it's him when you hear him.
Oh, yeah. Three notes in.
If you heard him on a fucking Blink 182 song, you'd be like, whoa, they got Eric Johnson. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It's almost like Stevie on those Bowie records, or on the Let's Dance album, you know? Like, it's like, whoa, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Like, it's so him, you know, coming out on that thing. But he invented, I mean, don't you think? I mean, since Eric, I'm sure there's people, but like guys even like Joe Satriani or what's the other guy that played with Steve Vai?
Yeah.
Like, these guys that are of that sort of guys that go out and unlike you, like, you have... you know, your thing isn't like you don't go out and tour and kind of like solo for a long time.
Right. No, it's more song based. Like a virtuoso instrumental guitarist.
And
you know?
Eric seems to have that more than those other guys. I mean, he's got songs even where he sings, which I like. You're his right. voice too, by the way.
He does. And you know, like you said, you know, it's him. I think one thing you're trying to develop as a musician is a signature. Like, this is my brand of what I do. You know, what's my voice? And he definitely has a very distinct voice. So whether you like his voice or you don't, it doesn't matter. It's very distinct, and it's fully matured and developed and
important.
Very deep and very important, man. He's a big influence on a lot of people.
Yeah, it's been very important to music. That must be a cool feeling.
Yeah, he's one of the guys.
Have you met him?
I have met him a few times. I don't know him very well, you know, but I was always kind of like, every time I round him, oh, shit, it's Eric Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like looking at a superhero.
Yeah.
You just kind of starstruck.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I had, like, in the early 90s when I moved here, I had a girlfriend that lived, what was that record store that where the Hi, How Are You thing is on the drag? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And it's between that and the Hillel there. It's like a house, a two-story house, and it was a duplex. My girlfriend lived there. But if you parked in the Hillel, which is the Jewish, like the Jewish student center, you'd get towed immediately. There was usually a tow truck like across the street just waiting for someone to park there. And he was going to the record store, and I was sitting on the porch having a cigarette. He parked his car, and he came around, and I said, hey, Eric Johnson.
Both names?
Yeah, hey, Eric Johnson. You're going to get towed. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, even if you're just in there for a minute. And he was like, and he went and parked some like down the street, and he came back walking by, and he went, thank you. And yeah, I've always been nervous. I was around him when I was like 16, when he was doing pre-production for Tones.
Wow.
I was like hanging out. I even bootlegged. I told Tommy this the other day. I bootlegged I threw a cassette in while they were rehearsing. I used to have like a 60-minute cassette of Eric Johnson, like the songs from Tones just being kind of worked out.
That's cool.
Yeah, and him talking to the guys and like Roscoe and I think it's Roscoe then. Anyway, so who else was a big influence on you?
A guy, you know, Johnny X is his name. He plays with Alvin. He played with Doug. He played with Rocky. Even produced one of Rocky's records.
Right.
He's like a really pre-70s vintage. He's like a bottle of wine, man. From before, no effects, you know, like he doesn't try and play like Jimmy Page or Eric Clapton or Hendrix, really. It's like everything before that happened, he's like a master of. So he was really helpful. And like personally, you know, he showed me a lot of stuff and kind of opened up my influences a little, quite a bit deeper and showed me a lot of roots. Like I was in the studio with Lloyd Maines for this record he's doing with Wade and Randy Rogers. And I played this country thing. It's kind of like a Jerry Reed idea. Uh-huh. And Lloyd's like, yeah, what was that thing you just played, man? That caught my ear. He's like, I kind of play something like that. And he basically played the thing back to me. I was like, well, I learned that from Johnny X, who learned that from you. You know, and so it's like how music is brought down. He had a good laugh and told me a story about Johnny X putting his head in some potato salad. But that's very strange. You know, hallucinogenics were probably not involved, but were a lot, you know. But Johnny X, amazing guy, man. Great guy. Sweetest guy. Great guitar player. Other guys around here. There was a guy named Boomer Norman. Who he can't play anywhere. He had a stroke and lost the ability to use his left hand, but he was really good. Paul Skelton, he's dead now. He played with the Tejano Dames a lot. And what's that?
I knew that name, Paul Skelton.
He played with the Wayne the Train Hancock.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Obviously, Red, you know, when Red moved to town. I bought his DVD even.
Yeah.
Tried to steal some of his licks. And
do you ever get the Grissom? The instructional video?
I've watched it. I don't own it, but I have watched it.
I bet that's on YouTube.
With him, I would just kind of watch him live a lot and listen to records.
Yeah.
But, I don't, like, try and necessarily learn his licks, but stuff comes out. You listen to a guy and you like it. I think stuff kind of comes out.
Yeah.
You know, that's what influences are about. And as opposed, I've never been a guy that could necessarily play, like, anybody note for note. Like, there's some guitar players that can learn it like a classical musician. Like they can learn Cliffs of Dover note for note. And there's some little passages that Eric Johnson does that kind of maybe come out in some of my phrasing, but I could never pick as fast as him. So it always comes back to me kind of listening to things I like, and it comes out in different ways than what I can actually do. Influences, I have to end up doing my own thing with whatever influences I have, because I can only play the way I can play. You know, I'm limited, but some of those limitations actually free you up. Like that's, if you could play everything you might. And, it's like what you can't play dictates what you do play. And so it becomes part of what creates your voice, you know? So I guess you gotta be thankful for those too.
Yeah. Know? Are you in any ads yet?
Any ads?
Like you know, for BRS?
No, they have me up on their website. That's it. You know.
Do you get free strings?
I do not yet. I do have a company that would give them to me, but I don't like using their strings. I want D'Addario. And come on, D'Addario.
Yeah. What's the holdup?
With Wade. I mean, you with play Wade, a lot. I do. With Wade, I do. I don't have to pay for the strings, but I don't personally have it, so I still pay for my own strings when I'm using it off the road.
Did you ever play with Bob Schneider?
I have not. But Bob, you know, if you need a fill-in, your guys can't make it. I got you, dude.
That'd be a good one. I've seen Grissom and Crushum both play with them.
Yeah, I know.
Those are good. I like, do you go to his Monday shows?
I have. Yeah. And Bob's one of my favorites. I saw him, okay, recently. I've always had respect for him. But, okay, he was doing the KGSR's Lone Star State of Mind.
Yeah.
And he showed up late, like he forgot he even had the gig, and he was busy working on his song for that songwriting club he does, you know, the game. And so he shows up late, and he gets there, but man, it was just him by himself. He had his keyboards, he had a trumpet, and the stuff he was doing, man, was just so genius. You know, he would get a loop going, he would sing his hook, you know, do a harmony with it, play trumpet on the hook, then sit down, play the guitar, and it was all this flawless stuff. He was like putting on capos for the next song before the loop finished, and like he just dominated, and it was one of the best performances I've ever seen, and just him by himself. So yeah, Bob Schneider, manic genius, man. I'm scared of him.
He's a great example of like it just do it, like just go out and play every day, write a song every day, and you'll be able to do this. That's fluid. That's why he said, that's why he dominates. He's just always in the zone.
Right.
You know, he's like a marathon runner that runs a marathon and a half every day.
Every day.
And then when it comes time to run a marathon, it's fucking no big deal. He's been doing it every day.
No sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking amazing. Who else have you played with here in town? That's it. What's Ernie like to play with? He's a really nice guy, man. I feel like I've gotten to know him a little bit during these
shows. Oh, man, he's so sweet, you know. That's been great. Like, you know what, we played with Ian Mack. That show, it had a lot of cool guests. Ian Mack was one.
McLaughlin?
Yeah. Yeah, he's cool. I just saw him at the Mark Ford show last week.
And oh, yeah? Oh, how was that lively. Show?
It was good.
Are you friends with Elijah?
I'm not.
Oh, he's a good guy.
But he's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. All right. So Ernie's a good guy to play with.
Yes,
you learn a lot.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, man. You just never know. You know, Augie and Joe King came and did that gig. That's always kind of fun. That nostalgic Tex-Mex stuff.
I love Joe King.
I can't even. Oh yeah, we had Jimmy Dale Gilmore. That was a big fun.
Oh, that's a great. What a great guy. That guy's a great guy too. One of my favorite guys.
Yeah.
Are you friends with Colin?
I know Colin. I'm not great friends with him, but yeah, no, I know him.
Hugh, did you grow up with any guys that played? Did you have like a buddy that was, or were you just like the lone kid with the older guys?
A lot of that, you know, I played with the old guys. you know.
It's so funny because it's the same thing, except I was friends with Ian like in high school and with Will Sexton.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there was some of the kids that were doing it, that are still doing it, and on a really high level, some of them, you know, were like Gary Clark and Yves Monse. And with Gary, I mean, I knew them.
Oh, yeah, you're their
but
age.
I was actually kind of intimidated, you know, and like, I know that's very personal to admit, but like Gary was so good and he just had this vibe. I was sort of intimidated to get to try and even know him. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, he was really nice killing it back then. Oh, totally.
Yves so great.
She is.
She's super cool.
She is, yeah. She plays so well and just has a great style too. And
did you ever get into like are you friends with Frenchie at all? Did you ever get into like 16th? Did you ever get into like Thurston Moore or any sort of like the weird like Dinosaur Jr., Jay Maskus?
I like some of that stuff, not really players. Heavily. But like what's the guy I'm blank? Nels Klein, who plays with Wilco.
You know,
he
kind of
does some stuff like that. And
outside guys that like.
Right. I like Sonic guitar. I think that I don't get to play that quite enough here in Austin. It's maybe it's just the gigs I've taken. Maybe country gigs, you know, it's like a lot of pretty direct stuff.
Yeah.
But I really, when I was playing with Casey, I would kind of get a little more texturally. And I thought when I played with y'all, like I would play less notes, but just Sonic. I think that's a whole art too. And I really do like stuff like that. Frenchie, I do know him not really well. He just produced a record of this guy that I taught guitar as a friend of mine. He makes those Red Eyes preamps. Have you ever? Fire Eye?
No.
A lot of people are playing them. I guess he invented it for Leah Zeger.
I don't know who that
She's,
is.
She plays with like CeeLo and all these crazy people.
Wow.
She's a violinist, but she was in the Austin Symphony for a while. And,
oh, okay.
But Warren Hood plays them, and a lot of fiddle players and a lot of guys around the scene use it for their acoustic direct box. They're hand-wired and made here in town. The guy who did the Ham Jam, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It was like this, he would have all these musicians come to his house and feed them, basically. Darren Appelt is his name.
Okay.
But he has like these house concerts at his house, but they make them over there. Anyway, Frenchie produced a record of this of a friend of mine who I taught and who makes those pedals. So Fire Eye and Red Eye, actually, they supported my album. They're a big sponsor, and the best acoustic preamp in the world, man, in my opinion. So
awesome.
Yeah.
What when you play acoustic, what acoustics do you
usually try and borrow one, because mine's like a crappy like it's a Martin, but that's loosely said. It's just bad. It's not very good. So I try and borrow things.
How many electric guitars do you have?
Only 8 right now. I sold a few off, you know. So I just have about 8. Yeah.
And it's always nice, like, there's one that I'm emotionally attached to, but I can always kind of move the other ones around.
Yeah.
You know? I usually sell them when I want to get one.
That's
like
a
something
good
new.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Tele that I've had since I was 15 when I started playing with Alvin. And people always ask me, like, is that a real 50s Telecaster? Because it's a 52 reissue made in 2000, but it's just worn out. It's on its third set of frets and looks dirty. And
wow.
It would look dirtier. They even cleaned it when they refretted it and stuff.
When you sit down to write a song, that's usually the one you pick up.
That my dad's old Martin I used to pick up quite a bit. I used Casey's guitars. I like writing on acoustic and piano. So I will. That's my thing that I got to get right now is my own acoustic.
Yeah.
But I always seem to end up having one around me.
Acoustic people should give you one because you're out there at the Gibson. Do you ever go over there and talk to those guys?
I have. They've helped me out. I had some guitars stolen, and they didn't give me one, but they loaned me one for a while until I was able to get something. So that was nice.
What? How did that happen? Get stolen?
Just out of a trailer. You know, someone robbed a trailer. Actually, I got a small amount of money when my mom passed a long time ago, and I bought a laptop and a Gibson guitar, and that was one of them that got stolen. Insurance kind of helped get stuff back, but that was one of them that was very sentimental, you know. Now it just doesn't even matter, but
yeah,
the Telecaster is the only sentimental one.
Yeah. Are you gonna tour when you put this out? I'm just totally just pulling questions out of the air. You don't mind this.
I don't have plans to tour on the record yet. My first goal was going to be to do just songs or gigs around here periodically. I don't want to do a Will Knack residency gig. I want to try and really promote the shows I do, you know, like with this release show. I'm doing a bunch of radio efforts and trying to get all my ducks in a row, so to speak, and make a legitimate effort.
Yeah.
And you know, the residency things are great, but it's, you know, I just don't think I have quite the following to, I'll bring out, you know, to bring people out every week. It's more of an event every 4 months.
That's, you know, there's two ways of thinking about it. And like, man, you've got enough going on outside and that's how you make a living. I mean, it's the same thing like with Skyrocket. I would do shows every 4 months and stuff, but I'm busy every weekend doing that. And Plankenhorn just happened to offer me this gig, so right. I took it. But I, man, I've always done residencies, and I can't. I've had some that I did for a long time, man. Like in the 90s, I think I did Thursdays at Steamboat for almost 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long residency.
That is.
That's a 2-hour show too every Thursday. That's the other thing too, is like, you know, you're just putting out this new album. That's what you want to promote and stuff. If you played every week and just played the album, it would just, you know. It's the other thing about a weekly gig is it's you got to do more than just what you would do if you were on tour. It's almost the opposite. You got to change shit up every week and bring in different songs. And
that's why Bob's so successful with his residency at Monday Night, because it's a different show every week.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. Plus, he's so weird.
Yeah.
I love that guy, man. I really do. And I love you, Will.
I love you.
I find you to be an incredible person. And I've seen your transition from your crazy times to what I would consider adulthood.
Well, thanks. And those crazy times when you met me, that was like kind of still like a step towards the right direction.
Yeah. No. But you've always been an amazing musician, and that's always been your focus. And you've always been really sweet, and I enjoy talking to you, and I support your music. I love your album. I listened to it this morning, and it sounds amazing. Jeff did a great job. All of you guys did a great job playing with Brandon Temple. What a great... Oh, you're a Stephen Bruton guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you ever get to meet him?
I did. I knew him when I was young. I actually have an amp that he toured with Bonnie Raitt.
That's right. You talked about this last time you were on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, he came up at... It was Maria's Taco Express, their opening of the place before the place that it's at.
Right.
And he was always up there when I would go up there a lot. I don't know if he was at a studio or what he was doing over there.
No, but him and Alejandro, like, they kind of, it's almost like their office. Like, if you needed to assassinate, you know, may rest in peace, but if you needed to assassinate Alejandro, you just hang out at Maria's Tacos
for a
week and you'll get him.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and I'll always...
out there, this is a disclaimer. If Alejandro gets assassinated at Maria's Tacos, I didn't have anything to do with it.
No, me neither. but no, Steven, I grew up watching Brandon and Yogi play with him, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that must be a good feeling to get to have those guys playing with you.
Yeah, Bruton is, man, so signature too, man. What a player and what a human being. I wish I knew him well.
Class act.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was such a nice guy. He always took the time to, like, he was always interested, you know? Same as Grissom, you know, and David Holt, guys that care about what you do.
Right.
And it's nice when those guys that you look up to are like, hey, I heard you doing this. And you're like, wow, you heard about me? What?
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Or that they said hi. I still like, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think I consider myself, you know, pretty good friends with David Grissom, but to hear somebody go like, oh, he said hi to you, I'm like, yeah, I wish wish someone was standing over there like, whoa, really? Yeah, yeah. He said to say hi to me. Some friends. You know what I mean?
No, no big deal.
Yeah. No big deal. Just Grissom. Anything else that I'm missing? People can go to willnack.com, K-N-A-A-K. You will find out about the show on the 23rd at Strange Brew. It's early. It's 8 p.m.
8 p.m., yep.
And you're going to have you're going to be playing with Brannon, with Yogi, and with Jeff Plankenhorn. And, of course, Casey Crowley singing some backup, who I love so much. And it's also your 30th birthday, so people can feel free to bring gifts.
If you want to, yeah, 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 or just, you know, pay three times for the CD. Or, no, there's going to be some going to, it's a hand benefit day too, so some of the proceeds are going to that
totally
as well.
It's totally worth
so.
Coming out. And that's the day that they have music all day from 7 in the morning. And
right, yeah, I plan to donate some of the CD sales too to him too. I mean, I got to give back, so.
You're a good man, Will Nack. And thank you. Your album's incredible. Everyone should get out there and buy it. It's available now on iTunes. Go to willnack.com. You'll put links on there. You've got a good Facebook page, and you post a lot of great pictures from the road, which I enjoyed watching from your West Coast tour with Wade Bowen. And support Will Nack. Yeah, get out there. Is there anything you want to say before you go?
Love you, Austin.
Yeah, Austin loves you.
Glad to be from here. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Love thanks, you, Johnny Gotti.
Love you too, buddy.
Said all in all, I'm just a man. Life never goes the way we planned.
World-class sideman stepping out on his own with his debut album, The Only Open Road. Get out to Strange Brew. If you are in Austin on September 23rd at 8 p.m., it is also his 30th birthday. It is also Ham Benefit Day. So you'll be doing great things for Will, great things for yourself, and great things for the music community and the health of your musicians. World-class musicians all on this album. Jeff Plankenhorn producing it. Amazing musician. World-class. Casey Crowley, world-class. Yogi, world-class. And, of course, Brannon Temple, super world-class. Trying to get that guy on the show. It's tough, man. I've been trying to reel him in. Come on, Brannon. Let's do it. All right, Will Nack, get out there. WillNack.com. Buy this album, The Only Open Road. It's fantastic. I've been listening to it, and I love it. Get out there. Buy it. Hey guys, don't forget, while you're out there doing stuff on the internet, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, or if you do things like on Stitcher, if you listen to podcasts on your phone, you can go and subscribe to us on Stitcher. Put us in your favorites. Yeah, you'll be getting a new every Tuesday, every Friday, brand new How Did I Get Here. You can also follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy, and our Facebook page, like it. It's called How Did I Get Here. You'll get pictures, see upcoming behind the scenes. What? Behind the scenes? How about some more Will Nack music? I think that Casey Crowley's singing on this song, so check it out. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Will Nack for coming by. I love that guy. Let's get down.
Saw you just the other day. Looked you in the eye, then you coldly stared away. I'm falling to pieces as our love decreases. Swallow my pride, keep from dying inside. So please tell me why that everything I do just leads me farther from you. Everything that I say just seems to get in the way. I was never meaning to hurt you. Did not even think I could. Don't you know I would change? Just call you misunderstood. I call you misunderstood. How can you act like you don't know me? Nah. With passion when you said the world you longed to show me. And after all that I've told you and showed you, and there's nothing to hold to, and we're fighting for. So please tell me why
from you, and everything that I say just seemed to get in the way. I was never meaning to hurt you, didn't I even think I could. Don't you know I would change this, call you misunderstood. You misunderstood me, all you do is sit and cry. Misunderstood. I call you misunderstood.